Blog Talk Radio.
Looking at the world through a keyhole, and you spent your whole life trying to widen that keyhole, to see more, to know more, and now, on hearing that it can be widened in ways you can't imagine, you reject the possibility.
No, I reject it because I do not believe in fairy tales about chakras or energy or the power of belief. There is no such thing as spirit. We are made of matter and nothing more. You're just another tiny, momentary speck within an indifferent universe.
You think too little of yourself.
Oh, you think you see through me, do you? Well, you don't. But I see through you!
Pushed your astral form out of your physical form.
What's in that tea? Psilocybin? LSD?
Just tea. With a little honey.
Welcome, everybody, to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics. And as you probably guessed, today's episode is going to be about Doctor Strange. Yes, it's that time. It is time for Marvel's, what is this, their second movie this year? Yeah, this is their second. Usually they do two. I think occasionally they've had three. I think this is the second one. The last one was Captain America, right? Yeah, Captain America Civil War. So Doctor Strange kind of fits into an odd place within the Marvel Universe. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But you know the film stars Benedict Cumberbatch, Tilda Swinton, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Mads Mikkelsen, Rachel McAdams, BD Wong. An amazing lineup they've got. There's Michael Stuhlbarg in a really small role that which could have been bigger. But yeah, they've got a great cast for this one. And the character is, I think he's being positioned to be the next Iron Man type character for the universe. But we'll talk about that a little bit more with my buddy Jeff Lyles of Lyles Movie Files in just a few minutes. I gotta be honest with you. I'm a little out of sorts today. This has been sort of one of those weird days where, you know, I looked up and all of a sudden the show was about to start, and I was not the least bit prepared. So if it seems like I'm flying by the seat of my pants a little bit more than usual, then that's the reason why. I don't know where the hell today went. It just kind of vanished in front of me, like Dr. Strange cast a spell over it or something. But we're also going to take a minute to talk about Hacksaw Ridge, or at least I will. Towards the end of the show, I'll give my thoughts on Mel Gibson's war drama starring Andrew Garfield, where he plays Desmond Doss, the first conscientious objector to win the Medal of Honor. So we're going to talk about that towards the end of the show. And while I got Jeff on the line, I'm gonna talk to him a little bit about what's going on with the Deadpool sequel. There's been some big changes in regards to that over the last few days. I'll pick his brain about the Wonder Woman trailer, which I hope he's seen. If not, well, then we'll skip it. and a little bit more. So that's it. You know what's going on. This is Cinema Royale. You can find us on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter at Punchy Critic. And, of course, check out my stuff every single day at PunchDrunkCritics.com. If you're in Baltimore, you can hear me on WBAL Morning News every single Thursday. Where this Thursday, yesterday I talked about Doctor Strange and Hacksaw Ridge a little bit. And you can also find me on WETA Around Town on Channel 26 PBS if you're in DC. All right, let's talk Doctor Strange. And for that, I'm bringing in my wrestling buddy, Jeff Lyles of Lyles Movie Files. What's up, man?
What's up, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Like I said in the intro, I'm a little out of sorts today, a little discombobulated. But otherwise, I'm good. I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. I was with you. I turned around and was like, oh, wow, it's time to call in already.
I don't know where today went. This is like the fastest Friday ever. I don't know what I've done today. I don't know what I've accomplished today. I mean, Friday is normally, most people know, the most recurring question I get, you know, every day is when do you sleep? The answer is I don't. But today I looked up and I was like, damn, what's going on today? What's happening? And I just kind of, I don't know what happened. So, but here we are. We're here. The show is going. I'm talking. You're here. So not everything has gone wrong. So, right. So I guess it's not all bad.
Everything's going according to plan. What that plan
so is. So far. So right. Far it is. Let's see if I can keep the show on track, though. Who knows how that'll go. Last week, Tim was on the show. I had all this crap I wanted to do, and then we talked for an hour. And I was like, damn it. And I didn't do anything that I wanted to do. But oh well, it doesn't matter. Let's talk Doctor Strange. You were there with me at the screening of this. The film stars Benedict Cumberbatch, like I said. And you know, the thing about Doctor Strange, most people don't really know the character. And I find that most of Marvel's most inventive movies tend to be the ones about characters most people don't know. And I'm pretty sure that's a concerted effort on their part to be that way. Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man, the movies that are a little bit more offbeat tend to be about characters most people aren't familiar with. One of the reasons why I played that clip in the beginning was I like his comment at the end about what's in the tea. Is it LSD? Is it whatever? Because Doctor Strange was basically created in the 60s, and the only people that really liked him were those who were high on psychedelic drugs. Because the character was just bizarre. He was just a bizarre character. He's the master of the mystic arts, all powerful sorcerer. He begins as a renowned surgeon who gets into an accident and loses the ability to use his hands. So he travels to Nepal, I believe, in a far off region where he falls under the tutelage of the Ancient One, who in the film is played by Tilda Swinton. In the comics, she's the Ancient One is one of his forms. His main form is that of an old ancient man. So there was some uproar about that, but I really don't care about any of that shit. I really don't. I got into a conversation about that the other day. I don't care. I don't. Unless someone can give me a reason to care, I really don't. Under the tutelage of the ancient, when he learns to harness all this power, his mind is opened up, and he becomes the powerful Doctor Strange. But he also learns of a villain who is threatening to bring chaos to the world, and he's one of the few that can help stop it. So that's the basic gist of Doctor Strange. And before I go too deep into my thoughts on it, Jeff, I want to get your opinion on what you felt about Doctor Strange in general.
All right, real quick, I liked the movie a lot. Like you mentioned earlier, Marvel really goes all out with these newer characters. What's crazy to me is how 9 years ago, nobody knew. I mean, you know, maybe you had like the diehard fans or diehard mainstream people, but nobody knew about Captain America, Iron Man, or Thor. And now they're digging even deeper because Marvel has this, you know, quality assurance thing going, and everybody kind of like, okay, it's a Marvel movie, I'll give it a chance. So they can explore and do all kinds of wacky, out there characters like Doctor Strange and Ant-Man. And, you know, at this point, it just doesn't seem like there's a character that they can't turn into a multi-million-dollar successful franchise. And, you know, when you get a guy like Benedict Cumberbatch starring, you're like, oh, well, you got everything you need. And when they, like you said earlier, they got a stacked cast, and it's just one of those where it's like, wow, okay, they really can do anything with this kind of movie. And I thought it was totally appropriate to the character. It felt like a cinematic acid trip, and we just got to go along for the ride. So that's my quick
thought. Yeah, that's kind of the way I felt about it. I mean, I have issues with Doctor Strange, don't get me wrong. And when I first walked out of the movie and they asked me how I felt about it, I always hate getting that question right after a movie ends, because I need time to think. But, you know, I said, yeah, it's good. It's not my favorite, but it's good. I need to think about it. And my issues with it are the same issues I have with most Marvel movies, is that no matter how far out of the mold they tend to be, they always end up falling in line. And the last third of Doctor Strange is, I don't know, it's kind of a mess. And it ends up just kind of becoming another Marvel movie. You know, falling in line. Here comes the big bad villain and the whole world threatening crap that happens at the end. And it's just, and then of course we get the post credit scenes, which I felt were totally unnecessary this time. They were kind of pointless. They felt perfunctory, like they felt like they had to, but they didn't really do anything as far as I was concerned. So I was like, yeah, this is. They had to make it fit with the rest of the Marvel Universe, and it eventually goes that route. But before then, the movie's a hell of a lot of fun, and as beautiful visually as any Marvel movie we've seen. Yeah, I can't figure out what the hell's going on. I don't know what all that reality-bending crap is happening. I don't know why there are buildings folding in on one another, and what the hell is everybody else doing during this time. But I don't know. But it looks really cool. It's kind of like The Matrix. You know, a little bit like Inception, kind of a combination of all those things. And at least from a visual standpoint, Doctor Strange is incredible to look at.
Yeah, definitely. It was one of those movies where it's like everything, it's like there weren't any rules to it, so they could do whatever. And I don't even feel like even a diehard Doctor Strange fans were going to go, wait, they're not doing this. So they had total freedom, but I really felt like the director got what made the character unique. So with a bunch of crazy visuals, it's a lot of spectacular sights and that kind of sense of complete freedom where anything can happen. And you're like, okay, it's a magician, so we'll go with it.
It really did feel like The Matrix, though. Like he had wandered into The Matrix because he, you know, Once he became involved with the Ancient One and Chiwetel Ejiofor as Mordo and then Wong, you know, there's all this mystical kind of kung fu crap that's going on around him, this mystical mumbo jumbo that nobody understands. No, but I mean, I'm calling it crap, but it's not bad crap. It's just, you know, stuff that you don't really, that he doesn't understand completely. It's like he's wandered into a whole new world, and she basically tells him the same thing. Like, you know, you've been peering through a keyhole this whole time, and now you're seeing a larger, a larger sense of the world. It really is like he's wandered into the Matrix in a way.
Mm-hmm. And there is no spoon.
There is no spoon. Not yet, anyway. Maybe there'll be one in the sequel.
It'd be cool if they have a Keanu Reeves cameo.
By the way, it's been confirmed that the sequel is titled Doctor Strange Reloaded, and then the third one is Doctor Strange Revolutions.
I'm not so sure that's the best idea. Just throwing it out there.
No, there'll be an instant revolt if those were the names of those movies. I enjoyed kind of the humor of it too. I'm not so sure how I felt about the precocious cloak of levitation. That seemed to have a
that
mind of its own.
That was kind of Disney-esque.
That was Disney-esque.
It felt a little too cute. Like, yeah, okay, you're pushing it. And I thought they went about as far with it as they could because they kind of made it seem like it was his pet, which isn't how that needed to play out. But, you know, I understand
they've
got to make
weird.
Some concessions
like
for the mainstream audiences.
It was like somebody said, we got to make something funnier here. We need to do something funny. And I don't really know where that came from. Yeah, I mean, it just didn't make a whole lot of sense to have a cloak be like a puppy. I almost thought it was going to sound like Scooby Doo. Like I was waiting
like
for
crypto.
It to make it sound like Scooby Doo. But exactly like Scooby Doo is like I would imagine its voice sounded if it had a voice.
Uh-oh.
That's the way it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. You know? So I don't know what made them feel like they had to do that, though. That's yeah. one aspect where I had to put it. But
what about
but
the
I really enjoyed it. I really Rachel McAdams. I feel like she's going to be joining Natalie Portman in trying to get the hell away from this movie soon.
Yeah.
Because that character.
So that's the first big check comes in. It's like, whoa, okay, maybe I'll stick around for a couple sequels.
No.
Yeah,
no.
She was worthless.
Natalie Portman didn't do that, and Rachel McAdams wouldn't do that either. Natalie Portman
did the
She stuck around for one movie. But
yeah.
she's actually, but she had to. It's not like she couldn't. It's not like she could just walk out. She did. She was not enthused.
Well, yeah, they had her
sign
for the second one.
Right?
Yeah.
Well,
she's
not
excited
enthused
about working with Patty Jenkins.
Well, but she was not excited after the first movie. Yeah, I mean, but she was not excited after the first movie. I seriously doubt Rachel McAdams is excited after this movie because Christine Palmer does not do very much in this movie, and she's never going to.
She helps Doctor Strange a lot.
Yeah.
She helps him tap
the
into
only thing
missing
that,
humanity.
The only thing that can happen to her in the next movie is that she gets kidnapped or something, which is what happened to Natalie Portman in Thor: The Dark World, basically. She became a victim throughout the entire movie. So in fact, the movie was about her being a victim. So, and I imagine that's the only route that can happen with the Doctor Strange sequel for her. She's going to be trying to get away from this franchise, too. That's just the way I look at it. She's too big of an actress for a role that's not going to require much from her. And I just don't see it last very long. I mean, she's it's not like she's bad. Natalie Portman wasn't bad in the Thor movies. It's just there's not a lot there for them, you know, when they can get more elsewhere. So now if she were to become Night Nurse, then that would be one thing, but she's not going to become Night Nurse.
That role has already been filled. Thank you.
That role has basically been filled. So it's not going to happen.
So,
I'm not a big fan of that. But I'll tell you who I did like, though. That's Chiwetel Ejiofor as Mordo, who I think is probably... And he's amazing in pretty much anything anyway. But I think Mordo may be the best non-Avengers supporting character Marvel has already. I think he's fantastic.
Already?
What are the great non-Avengers supporting characters that Marvel has?
Hold on,
uh-huh.
I'll come up with one.
Yeah, I mean, I can name a couple that are good.
You said Avengers, and then you threw me all off. But that's
I said non-Avengers.
So I was
Avengers,
go with
of course,
the
because I'm not
going to
say Avengers
because
Avengers.
Yeah.
Avengers are lead characters. That's why I said non-Avengers supporting characters. You got like Happy Hogan, Pepper Potts, you know, the characters from Thor, like Dr. Selvig. You know, those are good characters. But none of them are complex.
Yeah, but he's not really set up like that, though.
None of them are complex
characters. Because
they're
setting him up to be deeper and more meaningful to the whole franchise. So,
I get your
point.
That's why I'm saying that. None of those characters are very complex. There's a lot going on with Mordo throughout this movie. He's somebody who is deeply committed to the ways of the Ancient One until he sees that commitment tested in a way that he wasn't prepared for. And he's fighting, you can see him struggling with it throughout the entire movie. And, you know, the reason why we can sense that is because of Ejiofor's, performance. But he's set up to be something much bigger for the next movie. And I think they did a really good job of doing that. He's probably the most fascinating character in this to me. But I do kind of feel like Doctor Strange, as much as Benedict Cumberbatch is good in the role, it's one of the few times where I feel like because he tends to gravitate towards mightier-than-thou characters. He almost always does. He does manage to make this one feel a little bit different compared to the rest of them. But...
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like Doctor Strange's evolution is very deep. In fact, it kind of they jump about 10 paces ahead. all of a sudden he can fight off Mads Mikkelsen's character and a bunch of guys who have been training at this thing a hell of a lot longer than him, and it just kind of happens.
He has
overnight.
A photographic memory.
Yeah, that's not a good reason. But
I like that. That's different.
That helps him study. That does not make him. that does not make him a sorcerer supreme of that level that he was fighting at. But that just helps him to study and to learn. That doesn't mean he can perform it. Those are two different things. But
he was learning.
But in terms of, what did you say?
He was learning slowly, but it's like your whole thing with the Matrix. Like, Neo was getting chunked out for most of the movie. And then when he got it, it was like that light bulb went off. And it's like, oh, wait, now I know what I'm doing. And
I never saw that light bulb moment. I never saw that light bulb moment in this movie. No, it just kind of happened. He was thrown into the fire, so to speak. And I know they kind of make reference to that, but I don't think his evolution is very deep. And it goes further than that too. It's not just in terms of his powers, but also in terms of his personality. That takes a drastic shift as well, without, I think, a lot of in between. But Mordo, I think you see his evolution going at a pretty good pace throughout the film. So I was actually more interested in what was going on with him than I was just about anybody else. But I'm really curious to see what happens with him next. Although I feel bad that Mordo will probably be relegated. Well, no. Let me take that back. I think they could possibly set Mordo up to be the next Loki if they wanted to. Because they are, I think, trying to set Doctor Strange up as the next Iron Man. And the character has, him and Iron Man have a lot of similarities in terms of personality and their outlooks.
And their origins.
Their origins are basically the same too, going to extreme lengths to overcome physical ailments. It makes a lot of sense, and their arrogance and things like that. But I don't know. I think Mordo could possibly be set up as the next Loki for the next phase or later on. What do you think?
I think he's going to be different. I think they're going to have to go a different route in terms of their villains, because if there's one thing that Marvel's still kind of lacking, it's that next Loki. The fact that you're still mentioning him after, 4 years when he was the main guy in Avengers kind of is telling. And they've had a slew of movies since then. And, you know, they always have decent villains, but it's not anybody that's kind of like taking that Joker role where they're kind of like, oh, wow, okay, this guy's really being an equal to the hero. And it's not just so much the guy for the hero to knock out in the end.
Marvel has terrible villains. That's
no,
like
they
their
have
one
great
big
villains. They've just have done them poorly.
Really? Who are the great villains that they've had in the movies? Other than
Loki? Jeez. Well, I mean that they've done a great job with, or the ones that should have maybe been done better.
No. I'm not talking about potential villains that they could use. I'm talking about villains that they've actually used on screen. They've not had good villains other than Loki.
Ultron worked for what they were doing with Ultron. I mean, he wasn't at Loki level, but none of them are. But for
he
what
was,
Ultron is.
I didn't think much of Ultron at all, but I don't know if there was a good there's been a really good Iron Man a really good Marvel villain outside of Loki. Not one that's memorable, at least. And it's not as if they haven't had multiple movies in order to correct that. I don't think there's been one. But more
well, Thanos at least has some presence.
No, he doesn't. What presence?
Thanos?
What presence
he's sitting
is
around looking all menacing, and then in Guardians of the Galaxy, he was like, okay, this guy's actually going to do some stuff.
He didn't need to yet.
I mean, we're just kind of building up that long tease that, okay, this guy is going to be something. And I don't think they've let that down yet.
By the time we see him, it will have been about a 7-year tease of Thanos. And if he doesn't do something like kill everybody, he's going to be a disappointment. But so far, he's
done nothing.
I don't
need to kill anybody. Well, he's not supposed to yet. We just need him to be the guy lurking behind the shadow.
No, we don't. That's exactly what we don't. That's exactly what these movies don't need. They got enough guys lurking in the shadows. He's been lurking in the shadows long enough. We don't need that guy anymore. You need somebody who's an actual
threat. He's the only guy that is kind of like Thor's the only person that's aware that, hey, maybe there's something deeper than all this. And he's not on any of these guys' radar yet. So once that happens, which I assume will be in 2 years from now, then he's going to burst on the scene, and it's going to be we need the entire Marvel Studios universe to knock him out.
As of today, Thanos is not a good villain. You can't say that he is because he hasn't done anything. So you can't say that he is. So, and they have plenty of other villains. They've had plenty of other villains, and none of them have been very good. All I'm saying is that Mordo has big potential, because I don't think we'll be seeing much more of Loki after these Infinity War movies.
Thanos has Mordo has.
No, he doesn't, because he's not played by Chiwetel Ejiofor.
See, you can't go with that. No. They've had good actors playing you.
Yes, I can. The reason why Loki is so good is because he's played by Tom Hiddleston. If anybody else had done it, he would not be as memorable. So yes, you can do that. You can say that.
I think they could have found somebody else to do Loki. Yeah. Was he on your radar before Thor?
Who? Tom Hiddleston? I knew who he was.
Yeah.
But it was his performance that made Loki great. No one likes Loki outside of that. They like him because he's played by Tom Hiddleston. He does a fantastic job. No one else would have played him the way Hiddleston played him. The same way that Ejiofor plays Mordo, the way he plays him, which is why he's so good. But there's not that much potential in Thanos to be that way. One, Thanos is not a complex character at all. And
he's really complex. Thanos, got that whole worship and death thing. He's a guy
that does not make him complex that he worships death and wants to kill everything.
No,
That's not a complex plot. And by the way, hold on. You're talking about the comics. We don't know what they are doing with him in the movies. So you can't even say that yet. So I'm just saying, they might do something completely different with him. This is Marvel and Disney we're talking about here. They might not go with that. So you can't use that. Anyway.
I'm going
on.
With the same premise that you're going with, Mordo. But all right.
No, you're not. They're not at all the same thing. At all. Not in the least. But whatever. The point is that Mordo is a fantastic character, and I can't wait to see what he does next.
I'll agree that he's a fantastic character.
Yes, all right.
No argument there.
Okay, good. Then we'll end on that note then. So Doctor Strange, I think we both recommended. I actually want to go see this on the Jumbo IMAX at the Smithsonian if I can. And I would actually suggest that most people go see it that way, or at least in IMAX 3D. I do think this is one of the rare times that it's worth it. You agree with that?
Oh, totally. This one is going to be one that you won't get the full effect at all watching it at home. Even if you have a gigantic screen, you're going to be surrounded by it with that IMAX presentation.
Yeah.
And
I'm trying to do
job with 3D.
Me too. And I wouldn't expect this from Scott Derrickson, who's, you know, he's usually known for kind of, you know, middle-sized horror movies like Sinister and things like that, Exorcism of Emily Rose. But he did do, what was the Keanu Reeves movie where he came back from outer space? The Day the Earth Stood Still. He did do that one, which looked pretty good. But I still wouldn't expect this movie that looks like this from him. And he really does a fantastic job being as imaginative visually as possible. So I didn't like that. Huh? Anyway. All right, so let's take a quick break. And when we come back, you and I are going to talk a little bit about what's going on with the Deadpool sequel. Because there's some stuff that's been going on with it. So we'll be right back.
Vibration.
All right, and we're back. All right, so before we get before we move on here, I just want to remind everybody to check out Cinema Royale on Facebook and to follow me on Twitter at Punchy Critic. And, of course, find my work every day at punchdrunkcritics.com. And be sure to check out Cinema Royale next week when I have my interview with Ben Younger. He is the director of Bleed for This, the Vinny Pazienza biopic starring Miles Teller as the boxer. Aaron Eckhart plays his trainer, Mickey Rooney. Yes, same guy who trained Mike Tyson. So, yeah, I talked to Ben Younger about that film a few days ago, and I'll have that interview for you next week. All right, and we are back with my buddy Jeff Lyles. We just finished talking about Doctor Strange. And I wanted to pick his brain a little bit about some of the stuff that's been going on with the Deadpool sequel, which, you know, there's been a lot going on about that film over the last couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'll just run over a little bit of it here. But basically what you have here, the director, Tim Miller, has dropped out of the film. He's not going to be directing it. Excuse me. And the reason given was creative differences, which is, you know, the chestnut that all studios use when they don't really want to talk about what's going on with it. There have been some other rumors floated about it. Some say that Miller and Ryan Reynolds got into a beef over the casting of Cable. Miller wanted to have Kyle Chandler in the role. He was rumored for it way back a few months ago. Reynolds did not want Chandler, and they beefed over that. There's been some other talk that has to do with the budget. Miller wanted a much bigger budget and wanted to use all of it, while Reynolds and the screenwriters were in favor of keeping it the same size as the first one. I would agree with the latter point on that. But none of that really made sense to me because Miller has never been a guy who's talked about wanting a big budget. So I don't know what the truth is in that matter. But most recent rumors are that David Leitch, who was the co-director of John Wick, is the front runner to direct Deadpool 2. And I wanted to get your opinion, Jeff, on what you think about that development if we were to get somebody like David Leitch in there to direct Deadpool. Because the first one was amazing. It looked great. And the action sequences were on point. If we could get some John Wick-style action there, it could be even better. What do you think?
Oh, I'm totally on board with it. And this whole deal has been really crazy. And then the composer for Deadpool also left.
Right, I was going to bring that up later, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Junkie XL has also dropped out, so we're not going to get the same music either.
But I feel like with the first film, they got the formula for how to make a successful Deadpool movie. And I don't think that he's a character where, you know, clearly they're not going to replace or they're going to side with a director against Ryan Reynolds in this. But just at least from the reports, they need to keep it pretty much just the way it was in the last film. You know, toss in Cable, but don't go too far overboard. You got him, and just let Ryan Reynolds do Deadpool. He's Fox's most successful, faithful adaptation to a comic book material in terms of just being true to the comic. And it worked. People liked it, and audiences went to see it. So, you know, that's a successful formula they finally figured out, and they just need to keep it going. And getting the guy who did John Wick to be the replacement director, it seems like a big win for it. So I'm still excited and not worried about these reports. I think it's fine. And I'm definitely on Team Reynolds and if those rumors for the reason for the split are true. Deadpool doesn't need to get bigger.
No. The fact that one of the biggest mistakes that studios have had this past summer, where we saw sequel after sequel bomb, was that they spent so much money that there was little profit to be had. And, you know, in most of those cases, if the film had cost $50 million less, you'd be talking about it as a hit. I mean, that goes for movies like Independence Day 2 and so forth. And even a movie like The Legend of Tarzan, which actually did well, except for the fact that it cost like $200 million, which made it not seem like it did very well. Mm-hmm. So, and the good thing about Deadpool was that it cost what, between $60 and $70 million, I think. I think that's about how much it cost. And made, what, about $800 million, something like that? I mean, why mess with a formula that you know... Why mess with a formula that you know already works?
$58 million, gross $782.
Yeah. So why mess with it? Why mess with a formula that works? If you don't need to spend $150 million on Deadpool, which there's no business for a Deadpool movie to cost $150 million anyway. I would argue there's no reason for any movie to cost $150 million. But why mess with it? The other thing that's going on with Deadpool 2 is that they're trying to cast the role of Domino, which she's one of my favorite characters, so I've been keenly interested in the route they're going. Now, the first person who was rumored for it some months back was Mackenzie Davis, who I love, and I would kill to have her play Domino. But there have been other candidates mentioned. Ruby Rose, who's just seen in the XXX sequel trailer. Kelly Rohrbach from the Baywatch remake, Eve Hewson from the Showtime Cinemax series The Nick, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I would watch do just about anything, Sienna Miller, who's great, Stephanie Sigmund from Spectre, Lizzie Kaplan, who was just in Now You See Me Too, and Sophia Boutella, who was great in Kingsman. And Kingsman Secret Service, and Sylvia Hoeks, who I don't remember where I know her from. She's going to be in the upcoming Blade Runner movie. I don't know if I've seen her or anything. Out of all those, other than Mackenzie Davis and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I will put ahead of just about anybody for any role, I gotta admit, I kind of like Ruby Rose. I do. I mean, and I'm not really a fan of hers. I don't know why I would be, but she seems to have the kind of Domino personality. Mm-hmm. Domino is sort of a wild, kind of unpredictable character. You know, her powers that she projects a luck probability field, sort of like my favorite X-Men ever, Longshot, like exactly like him.
Longshot's your favorite X-Men?
Longshot has always been my favorite X-Men.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why. Well, maybe it's because I always loved
like
that time period in the X-Men comics. I mean, I always loved that time period in the comics when they were in Australia, and that was like my favorite run. And he was my favorite character out of that group. He's an outsider amongst outsiders, which tend to be characters I gravitate to. But anyway, Ruby Rose seems to have the kind of personality in real life that I imagine Domino would have. I think that's why she'd be good at it. But out of this group, who do you like?
I'm with you. I think Ruby Rose, you know, when you were going through the list, I'm like, yeah, Ruby Rose is who I go with. And that's why I was laughing, because it's like, you know, I'm sure anybody could do Domino just fine, you know, slap a little white face paint, put a little eye black on the eye, you're straight. But Ruby Rose just off the bat just seems to embody everything you want from Domino without even being, you know, in a kind of role like that.
I think that'd be
an easy one.
Yeah, it's not like she's going to be expensive or anything. So
right,
going
exactly.
To get
it. Even better. Yeah. Keep those costs down.
Exactly. No, I think that's a good... difficult casting would be Cable. I actually kind of like the idea of Kyle Chandler, but you know, I don't know who would be a good fit for that role. John Nolan, my partner everybody says Stephen Lang. John Nolan says Stephen Lang too, and yeah, he looks the part. I think he's too old though, because I think they would still, even though we know Cable's an older character in the comics, I think they would try to cast him younger than that. I don't know who else could play him. Thinking off the top of my head, other than Stephen Lang, I'm trying to think who else could play him that's younger, and I have no ideas. You?
Let's see. I was looking up John Hamm. Liam Neeson. But I mean, it's like the usual suspects. You know, Dolph Lundgren. Even Lane just seems to have Cable, you know, what I'm looking for in a Cable. And I know the whole thing is, well, we got to get 18 movies out of him.
People keep assuming that Fox is going to want some blockheaded guy with gray hair. They might not want that.
Yeah, it's funny.
That's the only reason why people keep saying Stephen Lang or Ron Perlman, because they're blockheaded guys with gray hair. Fox probably doesn't want that. They might not want that, though.
This is a studio that's still keeping Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen as main roles in their X-Men films, so they're not afraid to go old.
No, that's a good point. And they've stuck around for a long time. That's true. Mm-hmm. That is true. But it does feel like they're kind of in the middle of a youth movement, though. When those guys came on, it was 2000, and franchises aren't like they are nowadays.
True. Yeah, but a lot of audiences aren't responding well to their youth movement.
We're only one movie into that. I mean, they responded perfectly well to it. In X-Men Days of Future Past, they responded well enough to it. They responded well enough to it in X-Men First Class. So I don't know. I think that if you're talking about X-Men Apocalypse, I think that movie had other issues beyond the youth aspect of it. I don't think that's what kept people away. It was a movie that looked questionable from the start. From our first images of it, and then the plot was never really shaped out well. It had a lot of issues, but I don't know if the characters, the actors themselves are really the reason. So I don't know. Anyway, did you get a chance to check out the Wonder Woman trailer, the latest one?
Oh yes, sir. Yes.
What'd you think of it?
Well, you know, I think they're actually, at least in the trailers, which, you know, they could mess, you know, fudge around as need to, but it looks like they understand what, you know, the kind of character Wonder Woman needs to be. She's not like the background character, she's right in the thick of the action, and it really seemed to emphasize that, which is cool, because, you know, she's one of the three most powerful characters, you know, the main superheroes in DC. You know, maybe just Superman above her. So I like that they focused on that and didn't, you know, there was one quickie scene that was like, oh, there's going to be some romance between her and Trevor. But I was glad they didn't make that a big focus. And then, you know, just seeing her in action was cool. Seeing Amazon doing their thing was cool. So it's like, yeah, I was already excited about it. And this trailer just further stoked that flame. I'm really excited about seeing DC get a little positive buzz off of the trailer for one of their upcoming movies.
Yeah, me too. But then again, they always get positive buzz off their trailers. It's the movies that tend to fall flat. Suicide Squad was one of the best trailers. And then, like, as soon as it came out and everybody was all excited for it, that's when the rumors about, man, they're going to rework everything came out.
Yeah.
So you're like, what movie are we getting? But, you know, I agree with you. I think they're figuring out that Wonder Woman is a character who's deserving of the same level of respect as Batman and Superman, and it seems like they're going to treat her that way. My first takeaway from the trailer was that I really want to see a movie that's set totally on Themyscira, on their island. I want to see a movie that's set totally on the island with the Amazons. That could be really amazing. You don't think so?
You know, why would who? Well, I'm totally on board with focusing on that whole Greek mythology of Wonder Woman and like all the Olympic gods and having her deal with like Ares and all that. But, you know, if they're just going to focus on Themyscira, I don't know where you get that action unless there was like a thing where you're doing a Black Panther where there are different groups trying to invade the island.
Well, there are bad characters on that island too. I mean, they're not all good. They don't mm-hmm. all, they all have personal agendas. When you read the comics, they all have issues. So yeah, and it is kind of, it is a little bit like Wakanda in a way. I mean, it's a, there is a rule on that island, and there are those who work against it. So yeah, you could do that. I would almost want to see a movie that's entirely, that has like no men at all. That's just all the women on that island, and that's it. I think that could be, that could be an incredible movie.
Could you
and
imagine
it be
that
a first
in Hollywood? Can you imagine that pitch? Yeah, we're gonna have a movie with no dudes. You just decide.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know what? I actually think if the movie's a hit, that pitch goes over really, really well. Because that would be something no one's ever seen before. And it's not as if guys are not going to turn out for it because there's no mm-hmm. men in it. Ain't no men showing up to see Wonder Woman to see Chris Pine anyway.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
He's very low on my list of priorities for that film.
you're gonna pitch an action movie on a Wonder Woman action movie with where all the women are dressed like her and fight like her and look like her. I think that movie does incredible because women will turn out. As long as you don't sexualize it, which they don't need to do. As long as you don't sexualize it, then I think that movie does awesome business.
Yeah, and they did a really good job of not making her out to be like sex symbol Wonder Woman. It was just like, you know, kick tail action hero. And you know, if you think she's hot, that's on you.
People were all worried because those couple scenes in Batman vs Superman where she was like, where she was wearing that dress and they were dancing whatever with Bruce Wayne, and they're just gonna sexualize her. No, they weren't. That's not what they were doing. But anyway, all right, I'm running low on time as I knew I would because we were talking too long. We were too busy fighting over Mordo. Now I'm short on time. Jeff, tell people where they can find your stuff at and what you got going on.
All right. So let's see. You can find me at Viles Movie Files. That's LYLES moviefiles.com. I'm doing a little bit of everything. Right now, I am going back through my Marvel Legends Doctor Strange figures to review them just in time for the weekend. But got a review coming up with Batman, the Return of the Caped Crusaders with the Adam West, Burt Ward Batman from back in the day, and just a little bit of everything, including some wrestling stuff, which I'm sure you'll be excited about. And you can follow me on Twitter at Miles Movie Files.
All right, man. I can't even figure out what you got, what your thing is over there at Miles Movie Files. Because it ain't movies.
A little bit of everything, man. It's everything I want to do.
Yeah. You might need to change the name.
Man, I'm pitching it to the brand team. We'll get back to you on that.
All right. Thanks for coming in, man. I appreciate you talking to Doctor Strange and some more movie news with me, man. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Indeed. All right, man.
I'll talk to you later.
All right.
And that was Jeff Lyles of Lyles Movie Files. All right. Before I move on to the next break, let me give you the rundown on what's coming out on Blu-ray next week. That is November 8th. Three picks that I think you should definitely check out. Sausage Party, this is the animated comedy from Seth Rogen and that crew with talking food. And it is gross. It is raunchy. It is bizarre. But it's also really, really funny. So definitely check out Sausage Party. These are rental. Kickboxer Vengeance is the sequel to the original Jean-Claude Van Damme. Actually, it's not even a sequel. It's a reboot. But it features Jean-Claude Van Damme in a supporting role as a different character. And it's surprisingly good. The action is intense. Jean-Claude Van Damme is at the top of his game. He actually gets some good fighting action in there. So check out Kickboxer Vengeance if you're into that type of flick. And Indignation, which stars Logan Lerman. And this is based on the Philip Roth novel. It's a drama about a Jewish kid who goes to a college and finds that life is very different on the outside, not what he imagined it would be. Indignation is probably the best out of those three movies to me. So definitely give that one a shot if you're looking for something a little bit more serious. All right. All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the show, and I'll give you a few words on my thoughts on Mel Gibson's Hacksaw Ridge. I'll be right back.
See, I don't think this is a question of religion, fellas. I think this is cowardice. Plain and simple.
Is that right, Doss?
Well, go on. Take a poke! Tell you what, I'm gonna give you a free shot. Huh? Right there. Hit me, Doss. Go on.
Let him have it.
Go ahead.
No?
All right, that was a clip from Hacksaw Ridge. This is the new film directed by Mel Gibson. And it stars Andrew Garfield as Desmond Doss, who is the first conscientious objector to win the Medal of Honor. Basically, he's the ultimate pacifist. He was a Seventh-day Adventist who vowed never to touch guns and vowed to never kill, which makes his decision to enter the war, World War II, join the military during World War II, an interesting choice. And, you know, and the central question of the movie is whether or not his faith and his values will be broken by, you know, by the demands of war. And, of course, that is not what happened. The true story of Desmond Doss is unbelievable. He during the Battle of Okinawa, he saved 75 lives single-handedly. 75, all by himself. It's incredible what he was able to do and how he was able to survive relying solely on his faith. At least that's what he says. He relied solely on his faith to get through it. And you know what? Whatever gets you through, man. You know? Whatever gets you through. But Mel Gibson, you know, Mel Gibson focuses solely on that aspect of Doss, his faith. And he does it to the detriment of the entire movie. He almost crushes Doss's incredible feats by focusing so hard on his faith. And I say that because, you know, he does it to the point that it almost makes everybody else who dies around him, who were just as much Christians as he was, almost make it seem as if they were lesser. You know, and Gibson goes to such lengths to paint Doss as this messianic, Christ-like figure, that it reduces everybody else around him, all the people that he was forced to save, all the people he couldn't save. Were they less faithful? Were they less than him? And that's kind of the overarching message of the movie to me, and that kind of hurt my enjoyment of it. Gibson was just so heavy-handed in wanting to portray Doss this way. There's one particular scene that keeps flashing through my mind, and it's near the end of the film. And I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm trying not to. But there's a moment where he's on the stretcher, he's being lowered, and Gibson shoots him so that he literally seems like he is Jesus on the cross, on the crucifix, being lowered from the heavens. And it is like, you've got to be kidding me. It makes absolutely, it's not that it doesn't make sense, it's just, you just want a little bit of nuance. I think Doss's story stands on the strength of its own, of its own feats. It doesn't need this sort of thing, but Gibson can't help himself. Another thing Gibson can't help himself from doing is going overboard with the violence. And I figured that, yes, he wants to draw such a stark contrast between the, you know, Doss, the pacifist, and the brutality of war. I get that. But he goes way over the top with the violence in this one. And while those scenes, those battlefield scenes, are where the movie is at its best, because Gibson can shoot a war scene like nobody else. And when it comes to being making sense for this particular story, I'm not sure that it totally does. Now, you still feel for everything that Doss is going through. And that's largely due to the performance of Andrew Garfield, and he is great here. And I'm curious to see whether or not he gets nominated for this. I think he might squeak in. I think there's a possibility. It's not a great performance. I have issues with his shaky Southern Virginia accent. It doesn't always work. But in terms of embodying the responsibility, the weight that Doss is carrying with him, I think Garfield does a really, really good job. So Hacksaw Ridge is a movie that I think is worth checking out. I think it's worth your time. And you may feel differently than me. And this is coming from somebody who's not necessarily a man of faith. Others may feel differently. They may see that the way Gibson portrays Doss as one of the movie's great strengths. I think this one is one of those movies that is really going to rely on how you feel about that. So check out Hacksaw Ridge. And let me know what you think. You can email me at punchdrunkcritics@yahoo.com. And I'm always interested in hearing your thoughts about the movies we talk about here or anything else going on with the show. I'm always interested in hearing the opinions of others. And I thank all of you who do contact me either through the show or through email or through punchdrunkcritics.com to let me know your thoughts. All right. So that's the end of the show. There's the music. I want to thank Jeff Lyles from Lyles Movie Files for coming on to talk about Doctor Strange. We also talked about the Deadpool sequel and the Wonder Woman trailer, which is pretty awesome. I want to thank you, mainly, for tuning in to Cinema Royale. We did two shows this week. That's kind of amazing when you think about it, considering how off and on things have been lately. Two shows. Now I'm taking a few weeks off. Like I said, in a few days, look out for my interview with Ben Younger, the director of Bleed for this, starring Miles Teller. And in the next couple of weeks, I'll also have an interview with Damien Chazelle for, I think, the front runner for Best Picture, La La Land. Look out for that interview as well. And also, my interview with Joel Edgerton and for Loving, which I think is also going to be a Best Picture contender. Look, it's the award season. So the interviews, yo, they're getting stepped up big time, right? So if you want to hear them all, gotta tune in to Cinema Royale. I'm Travis Hobson, and I will see you soon. Goodbye.